Welcome to The Interview Chair. My name is Jimmy Casas and I am your host. Are you an educator who is currently feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, or wondering if you can continue to do this work? Visualize yourself back in the interview chair. You are genuine, sincere, and full of passion. You convinced the group of people that you were the best person for the job and you believed it. That is the real you. Thank you for joining me as I take you back to the interview chair to remind you of why you wanted to become an educator. Welcome to episode 47 of the interview chair. It will rarely be easy, but it will always be worth it. Hey, first of all, I am pumped to announce that Jay Casas and Associates, along with First Educational Resources, are hosting a series of Culturize Institutes this summer throughout the Midwest, including Kansas City, Chicago, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Ken Williams, author of Ruthless Equity, and I will be keynoting, and joining us will be several other speakers like Lavana Roth, Jessica Cabine, Rick Warmly, Will Parker, Jenny Donahue, Cale Burke, and many others. You can find all of our speakers and topics at jimmycasas.com/events. As you know, educators in schools across the country continue to invest in the four core principles of Culturize. Champion for students, expect excellence, carry the banner, and be a merchant of hope. Many who claim that Culturize had a powerful impact on the culture and climate of their classrooms and campuses. Unlike other conferences that have people telling educators what to do, this conference focuses on providing perspectives on what educators can do through the Culturize framework and putting them into action in your schools. This is the summer conference that will not only provide educators with perspectives on practical tools and strategies for the 24-25 school year, but will also provide a renewed sense of energy and optimism for this great profession. So, register your team today at jimmycasas.com/events, and we hope to see you there. Now, let's get back to today's episode. Have you ever heard a teacher make the following comment? Well, it's not fair to the other students if I start making exceptions for this student who didn't even try to do the work. Or another example. It's not fair to the other kids who turned in their work on time if I allow this student to receive credit even though they didn't care enough to do it the first time around. I can assure you of this. No educator ever made these comments to an interview committee and then was offered a contract. But we also know this. Similar statements are heard in schools around the country. What is interesting about these comments is the word fair. Now, Rick Warmly, in his book, Fair Isn't Always Equal, addresses this very topic to help us better understand the importance of leveling the playing field for all kids, especially for our struggling learners. It doesn't need to be all or nothing. In discussing late work, Warmly makes the point that regarding students who have already proven themselves as proficient or at mastery level, we hold them accountable to a certain level of meeting deadlines because they learn the material, the skill, or the content. But there is a different frame of reference when you are first teaching students something they need to learn to become proficient. Are we going to hold someone who is not proficient, someone who is struggling, to the same level of accountability as someone who has already mastered the content? Warmly believes we shouldn't. Many years ago, I found myself in a situation in which I felt strongly that I needed to advocate for a student with an individualized education plan, or an IEP. His parent was told, with 2.5 weeks left in the marking period, that her child was likely going to fail the course. Now, my intent is not to be critical about what the teacher did or didn't do, but rather to reveal what I learned from that experience and that I wish we had done differently as a team of educators. So here are three things to consider we can do differently so we don't find ourselves in a similar position. Number one, always seek to understand why a student doesn't do the work or won't do the work. Eventually, you are going to have a student who tells you either through their words or their behavior that they don't care about the work. They may even try and convince you that they don't care. Over the years, I've learned that no child wants to be a failure, although I have met quite a few who tried to convince me otherwise. I believe what these students are saying without actually saying it is that they don't know how to do what we're asking them to do. Yes, other factors may come into play, such as a lack of self-discipline or a lack of work ethic or a commitment to overcome challenges. I would argue, however, that these factors are related to the student's lack of belief in their abilities to do the work, which then results in what appears to be a poor attitude toward the subject matter or school in general. Number two, do your best to maintain ongoing communication with the parents whose children are struggling. Now, in my opinion, there's no excuse for not contacting a parent whose student is failing a class. There should be ongoing communication that focuses on working together to help the student be successful. Even when we recognize early on that a parent or guardian is not able to help, we as the staff should maintain communication at the very minimum, at least as a courtesy. I often share with teachers that since the difficult conversation is inevitable, it is better to have it earlier rather than after the student has failed, which, by the way, gives the conversation a completely different tone. And let me add that the most effective communication is always going to be face-to-face or by phone when discussing a student's poor performance with a family or their caretakers. And number three, recognize that it's okay to ask for help. Sometimes talking to the student isn't enough. The amount of support that some students need for even the smallest of gains in learning can feel overwhelming at times. This is reason enough to accept the fact that the toll on one person may be too great. We must be willing to look at a student who is failing despite all of our best efforts and recognize that something needs to change. In the scenario I described earlier, at least six adults played a part in watching a student fail. Yet, we all believed we had done all we could to help the student be successful. When we reflected on what we had done to help the student be successful, we all responded by saying we had talked to the student and told him what he needed to do to pass the class. Now, obviously, in this case, we're talking about a high school student, but it would be no different for a student who was in middle school and perhaps in elementary school. Yeah, we would have to do some things differently, so we always look at things in terms of age appropriateness. But in this case, we're talking about a high school student. And what we as a teaching team failed to do was to get all six adults together in a room with the parent or guardian and the student, may I add, and come to an agreement about, number one, what success would look like for this student, and number two, identify what support the student would need in order to be successful, including what role the student would need to play in his own success. Now, I'm a big believer that students should always be a part of the meetings in which it impacts them. Too many times I see adults sit in rooms or in conference rooms by themselves and make decisions for students without having the student there. Regardless of the age, I'm a believer that we should start setting the tone for students to understand they too must have some skin in the game. After all, this is for them. And so they must have a voice in this process. Now, of course, there's always exceptions. We know that. But in general, that is my belief that that should be our practice. Now, this situation, I would say, literally made me sick to my stomach. My heart went out to this student because I recognized it as a system we had failed him. And remember, I'm the principal. So ultimately, I realize I'm responsible. But I also knew that we as a staff had the best of intentions, and we felt we were pushing him along and encouraging him to do what he needed to do to pass the class. The student, however, also had not taken any responsibility for his own learning, and he would now have to learn a tough lesson. I knew the right thing to do was to have a conversation as a team and explain where, in my opinion, we as a team had failed this student. And that was not a conversation I was looking forward to having. I knew I would take some hits along the way because some teachers may not feel supported, and some would feel it was unfair to the other students who had done the work to allow this student to have an opportunity to still pass the class, and that I would be rewarding a kid who had not put forth the necessary effort to be successful. But there was a reason the student had an IEP, and we had not implemented his plan accordingly. IXL makes the magic happen in classrooms. Why is IXL so special? Well, IXL is the most widely used online learning and teaching platform for K-12. It empowers schools with a complete curriculum, thousands of instructional resources, robust reporting, and assessment data. IXL saves teachers valuable time with ready-made plans aligned to their standards and textbooks. Built-in engagement tools like custom competitions make learning fun for students. Dr. Trujillo, a district superintendent, says, "For the teacher, IXL opens up the door to be a lot more effective and provide more differentiated instruction. Empower your teachers with the tools and insights they need to enhance instruction, all in one single, easy-to-use platform. Get started today at IXL.com. The decisions we face as educators can be quite complex and leave us feeling vulnerable. Sometimes we must be willing to stand up for what we believe is right and advocate for those who don't know how to advocate for themselves. Let me offer a few reasons why I believe this issue of personal investment in a student's behavior or level of performance or lack thereof continues to exist in schools across the country and why we must do our best to reframe it and see it differently. First of all, there isn't time. I get it. We're all busy. No doubt about that. I believe educators today are busier than they've ever been because of the amount of expectations that are placed upon them. But even so, it is imperative that we intentionally create opportunities to spend time with students. I believe that every adult at a school should strive to connect with students. I also know that schools everywhere have staff members who want to spend more time with students. So at a minimum, let's at least get those teachers and administrators working together to carve out time for students and staff to talk with them and learn from one another. It's a matter of trading time. So let's take inventory of where we are not being efficient with our time and begin putting processes into place that result in more efficient use of our time. A second one, it's not my job. On the contrary, there is no element more critical for school success than for staff to believe and behave in a manner that models a student-first mindset. This kind of culture starts with the building leader and teachers creating a common vision and agreeing upon values that honor every student. This is done by holding educators accountable for delivering quality content in meaningful ways and cultivating positive personal relationships with students. Every staff member needs to remember that students are our most precious commodity. And without them, we don't have a job. We may not want to forget that critical piece of information, my friends. Number three, dealing with challenges isn't worth the potential negative response. Now, teachers and building leaders must be prepared to support one another during challenging times with students and their families. Look, we all can predict these times eventually are going to come at us. We must recognize we won't always get it right, and that's okay. But that our best chance for success comes from working through difficult moments together with a non-critical eye, protecting each other rather than placing blame when we don't achieve the desired outcome. Taking time to walk through anticipated responses from each other ahead of time can help everyone avoid potential pitfalls. Success often comes down to each individual acting with courage and engaging in tough conversations. Hence, why it is so important that we build strong, trusting relationships with our colleagues so these conversations don't result in feelings being hurt. And finally, number four, when students behave poorly or fail to do the work, they don't deserve my time or attention. Now, this thought won't enter your mind if you recognize that we work with children or young adults in some cases who, in most cases, have not developed the ability to think beyond the short term. In many cases, they simply do not have the experience nor the level of maturity to understand the long-term consequences of their choices or actions. We mustn't make their behavior about us. Our focus must always be on the learning opportunities that lie before us, not just for the students, but for us as well. We can't expect that our students will always have opinions that coincide with the way we see things in our adult world. Sometimes I think we forget what it feels like to be that 7-year-old or 10-year-old or 14 or 17-year-old. But we can expect that they will have experiences as students that will shape them. And it is our responsibility as adults to set the tone for those experiences and make sure we never leave a student wondering whether or not we truly care about them. When we are intentional and take time to listen to our students, we often open up treasure chests filled with stories from students who have persevered through difficult family situations, overcome personal tragedies, family separations, abandonment, maybe even suffered through times of poor performance in school or struggle with severe learning disabilities. We become privy to stories of students who have defeated personal substance abuse issues, overcome self-harm tendencies, suffered severe trauma, or struggled with significant health issues. All these students demonstrate a certain degree of resiliency with the courage to keep fighting. Their stories inspire us and allow us as educators to remember that our work matters. The connecting with and championing for students matters more than we may ever know. Within the heart of every caring educator is the core belief that students are worth our time. It will rarely be easy, but I promise you it will always be worth it. My friends, it is time to recalibrate. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I hope that you will join me each week as I take you back to the interview chair. Because I know this, that when you sat in that interview chair, that, my friends, was the best version of you. Be sure to check out my website at jimmycostas.com/theinterviewchair for links, resources, and show notes. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at @Costas_Jimmy. If you enjoyed today's show from the interview chair, subscribe to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast to ensure you never miss an episode.